Word of mouth.
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 Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Throughout today's show, we've been exploring American conspiracies, cults, and cons. Our next guest is a Brit, which has been an asset for his scam. The journalist Alexander Reynolds has been investigating conditions in American jails in a pretty unorthodox way by going undercover as a volunteer detainee. So what does it take to con a bunch of cons? He tells that story in a new book called Convict Land, Undercover in America's Jails. And Alexander Reynolds, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, the U.S. prison system seems like it would be pretty tough to penetrate. How did you gain access to these jails in the first place?
Well, I discovered that I could go to jail in America as an undercover voluntary detainee, and with the right procedure, I could gain admittance to holding facilities in places like Arizona, Kansas, Nebraska, and North Dakota just by lobbying the boss, that be the jail supervisor or the county sheriff.
So beyond the sheriff and the supervisor, was anyone else aware you were working undercover?
No, that varied from facility to facility, but the sheriff or the jail supervisor, they were always very interested in feedback from behind the bars. How were inmates treated? How were they fed? How were they watered? Were the guards abusive? And in some instances, in particular this one facility I was up at in Cass County Jail in Fargo, North Dakota, when the corrections officers found out that I was undercover, they got the hump.
What does that mean?
Means that they were very angry with the jail supervisor for letting in somebody undercover to go and snoop on them.
Hmm. Why did you choose to go undercover in U.S. jails in the first place?
Well, that was the only place I could get admittance.
Really?
Yes. I had more luck getting entry into American facilities than I did anywhere else in the world, and that includes my own country. I lobbied the UK Home Office for access to holding facilities in the UK, and they told me to bog off, to put it mildly.
What was your cover story for being thrown into jail? What crimes had you committed when you did
that? Now that varied. The first cover story was driving on the wrong side of the road in a stolen car in possession of methamphetamine.
Well, I guess it would make sense you'd be riding on the wrong side of the road.
Of course, I'm English and it happens all the time.
How about your other stories? I know from reading that you had supposedly stolen a car, for example. What are the other crimes you came up with?
Well, sometimes the sheriffs or the jail supervisor would come up with the crime for me. So in Nebraska, I was booked in for espionage, and that was for spying on planes in South Dakota, chased across the state line, arrested by the cops and on hold for the feds. So that was an interesting story, booking into jail undercover as a spy, ostensibly. And one of the other cover stories was getting into a fight in a pub and getting tasered. And I actually got myself tasered. And the video's up on YouTube if you want to check it out to cement that cover story.
Well, you were a spy on some level. But did things ever get dicey? I mean, did your cover ever get nearly blown or threatened? I know once, you know, someone thought, if you keep talking to me, they'll think you're a narc, for example.
Yeah, that happened to me a couple of times. I mean, I did have trouble a couple of times, but you just have to stick to the story. And also you have to stick up for yourself. But, you know, if somebody was asking me questions, I go, what's with all the questions? Do you work for the police? Yeah. I would turn it round on them. And if they carried on, you know, I'd have punched them in the face.
Well, coming up with a story is one thing, Alexander. How about physical or psychological preparations for going inside?
Physical preparations. My wife was a civil servant and we were posted overseas in Thailand. And I'd been an amateur Thai boxer, kickboxer in the UK. And I took it up professionally when I went to Thailand. And I was doing that for 9 years over there.
Wow.
So like when I was going over there on the job, you know, I was in very good nick. I was in very good shape. So if somebody did want to fight me, you know, I put an elbow in their mush. Psychologically, I mean, I was the biggest concern for me was not so much being banged up, was not having access to things like cigarettes or good food. I mean, the bad food was punishment enough for me.
Well, you're quite obviously British. Did that work for or against you in jail?
Well, they all thought I was Australian. I turned up and they're calling me Crocodile Dundee and making jokes about All sorts of things. So I mean, I wasn't. That was funny. And then there was the. They would never suspect me of being undercover because I was a foreigner.
Mm.
That was a good thing. That did work in my favour. And being a criminal separated by a common language, that was also made for a lot of fun. I mean, I often, when I speak to people, I slip into English slang. So a lot of times the slang that I was using confused the inmates I was in with. But of course, I was able to understand all of them because, you know, people know about American culture through films and television. They don't really know so much about British culture over here.
Mm.
They all think we're like Hugh Grant.
Well, you're bringing up an interesting point because one of the things you write in the book is that a lot of people's impression of life in jail, it comes from television or films. So for us, set the scene for your first stay in jail. What were you expecting and did these conditions surprise you?
Well, what shocked me was when I went into, I think Salina County Jail, was how much it looked like a jail or a prison from a movie. And it looked just like the set from Oz, the HBO soap opera.
Oh, my God. I would not want to land there.
And I went to another facility that looked just like Oz. And it was full of people just like Oz. All sorts of groups, all sorts of people. I mean, and people keeping themselves to themselves. I mean, racially, I mean, the Latinos would stick to themselves. The African-Americans would stick to themselves and the Caucasians would. And the racism that I came across was appalling and endemic.
We're speaking with the journalist Alexander Reynolds, who went undercover in several of America's jails and wrote about the experience in a book called Convict Land. Walk us through a typical day in an American jail. Is there something like a typical routine?
Oh, now, that varies from place to place, but usually, you know, you've got reveille at about 8 o'clock in the morning, and then some places they'd make you clean up the cell block, and then they feed you. And then, of course, there's television, and television can be monitored or unmonitored. And it's basically like a long-stay car park. I mean, when you're thrown into these places, you're not made to do any meaningful work. There's an absence of rehabilitation. And that was the thing that really shocked me, was that I just felt like I was in a long stay car park.
Well, you mentioned Nebraska, Kansas. You were also in North Dakota and Arizona. Tell us about that experience in Maricopa County. Now, this is where Sheriff Joe Arpaio, a name that may be well known to many Americans, wields considerable power, somewhat notoriously in the case of prisons. Tell us about the experience in Maricopa County.
Yeah, well, that's actually a county jail he's running down there. And what shocked me about that place was Tent City.
Would you compare to a concentration camp?
Yes, it is a concentration camp. And I couldn't believe that such a thing could exist in America until I saw it with my own eyes.
Well, describe it for us.
Well, you've got bundles of razor wire, a perimeter. You've got a guard tower with a neon sign that says welcome for business. You've got men and women living out there in the searing desert.
In tents.
Yeah, they're Korean War surplus tents. And he is very indifferent about how they're kept. The costs of building a new facility for the jail were so much, he thought, well, you know, to hell with that. I'm going to put up tents instead.
Now, this is a guy we've read reports about. He keeps prisoners who are on work sites in chains, ankle chains, so, you know, sort of like the chain gangs of old, striped uniforms. And notable for their pink underwear, even for the men. What's the story there?
Yeah, the pink underwear. Right. Well, people kept stealing the white underwear. And so we had it dyed pink so nobody would steal it. But that didn't stop me stealing my pink underwear, which I still wear. And the pink thermal top I stole from there is great. And matching pink handcuffs.
As we mentioned, you were at a number of different facilities. So was there any commonality among your fellow prisoners? Why they were in, you know, what they looked like, demographics?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people who were behind bars who didn't really belong there. I mean, people with drink and drug problems, better served by a stint in, you know, a Betty Ford type clinic. There was also like a rapidly aging prison population. And of course, you know, a great many women. I mean, America imprisons more women than any other country in the world, more black people than any other country in the world.
You mentioned addiction. Mental illness is something that also comes up a lot. How are these conditions treated in jail?
They're not treated. Say, for instance, if you're coming off methamphetamine, the most you would get is a headache pill, mm-hmm. and you'd be in solitary for 2 or 3 days to sweat it out.
Right. You'd be detoxing heavy, I imagine, from that.
Yeah. And, you know, the staff's not trained to deal with that. You know, I mean, that's the thing about going into this world, was just seeing how tough the job is for detention officers. And they do this work in society that goes unrecognized and largely unrewarded. I mean, nobody really cares about the people who work in corrections. And it's a multifaceted job. You know, they have to be a psychiatric nurse. They have to be a social worker. They have to be a nightclub bouncer. You know, you'd be meeting guys, corrections officers who were very good at their jobs, you know, who were softly approach. And then you'd meet others who were just total Nazis, who seemed to get off on abusing the inmates physically and psychologically.
Mm. Well, so what comes across in speaking to you and also in your book is you have some doubts about the efficacy of incarceration as punishment, as rehabilitation. So you've clearly come away not believing that the U.S. is achieving those goals. Do you think, Alexander Reynolds, that you've sort of crossed over now after your undercover experience in prison from journalist taking this all in to activist working against it?
Yeah, I've become a reluctant activist in that sense, because it is what I did discover when I come out from all of these expeditions and when I'd be talking to friends and acquaintances, is how little people know about the subject, and they don't really care about the people behind bars. But also the great ignorance. Like, I'd be talking to Americans and they were totally unaware that America has 2.3 million people behind bars and the system costs $80 billion a year. People don't apply the same kind of scrutiny to this kind of spending that they do to other forms of government spending. And then we keep talking about privatization. And privatization is not a panacea. It is a Pandora's box.
Why do you say that?
Well, because taxpayers' money is going towards private corporations who don't care about lowering the crime rate. It's in their interest to keep these facilities 90% full. They want revolving doors, and they don't really care about rehabilitation. And you've got companies like Corrections Corporation of America. You know, for 30 years now, they've been selling private prisons in the USA. And one company founder was quoted as saying that it's just like selling cars or real estate or hamburgers.
Well, Alexander Reynolds, I sure hope you stay out of trouble. And thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alexander Reynolds, a journalist and author of Convict Land, Undercover in America's Jails. You can find more on the book and look at some videos of interviews and also some of the experiences that Alexander had in prison. The links are at wordofmouthradio.org. Thanks so much for stepping right up, ladies and gents, and listening to today's exploration of our imperfect relationship with the truth. If you like what you heard, there's much more at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us or send us your feedback or share your ideas for the program on Facebook and on Twitter. And if you missed any part of the show, you can catch up by subscribing to the Word of Mouth podcast. You can find it on iTunes or find the link at wordofmouthradio.org. I'm Virginia Prescott. Look out for the offer that's too good to be true. And please find us again on Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its board of trustees,
or its underwriters. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.